exceptionnel.
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De i semifinale igjen!
Two groups have come to a close. Group C and Group A. Spain and Germany out of Group C. Croatia and Belarus out of Group A. And today on the podcast, we have probably the best goalkeeping duo at the Euro, in my opinion. I don't know what you think, Chris, but I think in my opinion they may be. Rodrigo Corrales and Gonzalo Perez de Vargas. I did my best there with the pronunciation. But
sublime, Brian. Sublime. Great chat. What a treat to get the two boys together. We got them in the mix zone after the game where they beat the Netherlands. Beautiful stuff. But we've got another treat for you coming afterwards, and that is from EHF Euro correspondent and one of the biggest handball nerds on the planet, Bjorn Patson. He's going to talk to us about what the hell is happening to Germany right now and a bit of everything else at this Euro.
Not often you can say the word handball expert, but Bjorn Patson really is a handball expert.
I don't think I called him a handball expert. I think I called him a handball nerd.
That's true, but anyway, expert nerd, whatever you want to call him.
He really is.
The man has a brain for facts and figures and dates and names. It's just absolutely incredible.
Yep. But let's take it away with the two boys, Gonzalo Perez de Vargas and Rodrigo Corrales from the mix zone after the game. We started with Gonzalo and then we were joined by player of the match, Rodrigo. Enjoy.
It was a short involvement for you today after being involved so much in the last two games. But how would you consider that game from a goalkeeper's perspective?
Rodrigo's game today, amazing. He was in almost every shot, even those he didn't take. He was really close. He even scored a goal.
Yeah.
I don't know how many saves he made at the end, but I think he was more than 50%. And it was important for us, important for him, because he wanted to play really well after the first game. So far, it's working so good for the Spanish goalies. Let's keep that way.
I've always wondered, the two of you, well, all goalkeepers, but the two of you especially have a very good connection. And you're talking a lot during the game. What kind of things are you talking about when you're on the court there? Is it positional stuff? Is it motivational stuff? Or does it differ from depending on who the other keeper is?
I gotta say that he likes to come closer to the bench more often than I do. What we do is sometimes just to make the one who's in the bench try to comfort the one who's playing. More occasion is talking about the shots we've seen at the tape, the strategy we have thought about before the game, try to stick to it. And this is what we do. Sometimes it's also trying to make some fun about the save or the goal that we scored. And that's it. To be at some point, the goal is we are alone at the zone, and it's a way to be a part of something. Of course, the one who's in the bench can see a lot of things that the one who's playing cannot. And it's just to try to be together for a while.
So when you don't go back over to the bench, is that you saying I don't want to hear any advice at the moment?
Yeah, sometimes it's just go check your teammate, drink some water, because you don't know when the doping test is coming. Yeah. Sometimes it's only checking the hands, and which makes you feel more comfortable. And as I told you, and you're gonna realize now how long it's gonna be the next interview, but he likes to. To talk too much. But, it's a two-way relationship, so when he talks, I listen, and when I talk, he listens.
It's interesting you mentioned the tactical side of things, because I can imagine, or I could understand when the game starts particularly, the tactics might go out of your head. So the first couple of shots, maybe not what you're expecting, and then it's, I guess, even more important then that you have somebody who's doing the thinking for you, and just to remind you of what you talked about beforehand.
Yeah, our plan is to watch the tape, first of all, individually. Then we try to put everything in common. And, of course, at the beginning of the game, the players are more fresh. They can think much more than at the end of the game. And we have to stick the plan we thought before the game, because I think at the end it pays off. It's really good to have someone to talk about it, to remind you what was the plan when you go a little bit crazy during the game. And this is what we do. What ways?
This group phase has included two teams that haven't qualified for the Euro before, and without the 24-team competition may not have been in the Euro. You've played against both sides now. What do you think of the relative level, and do you think that this expansion has been a good move overall?
The results are saying so. Teams that maybe they will never make it to the group phases. For example, Latvia, they were really close to win against one of the strongest teams in the world. We have seen Portugal winning two difficult games in a row. I gotta say that the first of the old format was really close. 16 teams, it's really small. And also for the Olympic tournament before Tokyo, it's gonna be interesting who goes, who gets in, because now a lot of things are different than everybody expected at the beginning. And let's see what's happened.
I mean, you've played in a lot of big tournaments before, and since the change, do you notice a difference in the energy levels now in the team after this preliminary round compared to other preliminary rounds?
We gotta see now in the main round, because I think the biggest change is to play now four games. The level of handball is increasing all around. We've seen last year in the World Championship with Brazil, they won against Croatia. Egypt was really close to qualify to the Olympic tournament. I gotta say that the level is increasing, and this kind of phase group shows that. I think it's good for handball in general to have more teams able to perform at that level.
Here you go.
Yes.
We're doing a double.
Congratulations.
Oh, great. Now, we asked the first question. We asked Gonzalo about your performance today.
Yes.
So I guess the first question is, from a goalkeeper's perspective, to sum up Gonzalo a couple of days ago against Germany.
You know, man, it was crazy, unbelievable. It was everything that we need for in the game. It was that Gonzalo saw like this, because it was moments in the game that really we played really good, but in the beginning, don't forget that this man, he saved four balls in a row and keep us with confidence and put us in the game with confidence. So, I mean, we play really good as a team, but what he did, it was unbelievable and put us in a good position, you know, in this championship. So, it's a long time with him, you know, and it's not a surprise for me that he's saving. So,
I gotta say that here in Norway, we are not sharing the room. So we're missing each other much more than we used to. Yeah, I think in Vienna we're going to be back at a daily basis.
Oh, really? Back together?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. It depends how they
would. Now we're alone at the room, so that's why.
I feel good, you?
I'm feeling good, but I'm kind of missing.
We really miss it, you know, because it's a long championship. So it's good to have friends, sure. Actually. It's really, but not just teammates, also friends. It's good. And Gonzalo is one of them. So, as I said before, for me it's really a pleasure to see when he is playing. I wish him the best, because the best for him is the best for one friend of mine, the best for the team. So I think also today he helped me in some situations that they need, and I tried the same to him. So I hope that the situation keeps like this, the team is going this way, and we will see. It's a long championship still to go.
What's he like as a roommate?
I will say what I don't like it, but yeah, as a roommate, you know, I like it. That
sometimes I snore. Not every day.
For me, it's a simple thing. Like, you can be yourself. It's not, you know, you don't have to show that you are other person. Like, you are normal. We talk each other about different things, not just about handball, because we know what we like each other. I don't know, we can watch a lot of things, movies, doesn't matter what. But the most important for me is that I can be myself, I can make my jokes, I can be free, as am I alone, you know. So that's fine.
And Gonzalo, your favorite part of rooming?
I gotta say that he's improved a lot, because at the beginning he was a mess. he's making that face, but
you're going in the bad way. No?
I think it's the beginning of the end.
Okay.
I think he said it before. Just when you're away that amount of days, it's good to feel yourself at the room and be able to talk about everything, be with your friend.
But you've such a close relationship, as you say. You feel so happy for your friend when he's playing well. But you're both, I mean, to play at this level of the sport, you have to be incredibly competitive as well. What's so right about a goalkeeper pair that you can be so competitive with each other, but also somehow support each other in that way? It's really unique.
Goalies are like a marriage, a couple. What you want is a marriage to go through every situation that appears in your way. It's difficult to play, for example, a tournament like that, all the games at the high level. You know, some days you're gonna play low or you're gonna play high, and what you want at the end is that the goalkeeper both perform at the best level we could make. So this is,
that's it.
I wouldn't never be angry if I don't play because he's playing good.
To win championships like this, you guys know almost an MVP performance is needed from a goalkeeper throughout the whole championship. Does it really give you comfort knowing that there's both of you here? Because a lot of teams, they rely on one goalkeeper, really, when you think about it.
In one way, of course, for me, it's easier to know because I know if I have a bad day, he's behind, you know, so that makes it easy. Also, it's difficult because when you don't have a good day, you know, probably he is going to have it. So this is the other part, you know, like, I mean, I think we are two good goalkeepers, of course, and we are trying to help just the team. It's difficult sometimes, you know. For example, he played amazing against Germany. What I want also today is to show to my team also that I'm here. That's normal, that's competition. But I'm not mad about when he's playing or not, because at the end, what the people it remembers will be if you get on the top, if you win championship, if you are there. And for me, in my part of view, as Gonzalo said before, it's always times for everyone. It doesn't matter if it's 60 minutes, one penalty. Just my mind is just to be ready to feel that I can be important in this team. Doesn't matter. Maybe sometimes I can be important just helping him and giving some advices that I know.
That's what he said as well before you arrived.
So, you know what I mean? It's like everyone wants to play. We are not going to lie. It's everyone who likes to play to save the last ball, last minute, and be the king. But, I mean, if he's playing, I'm glad too. And that's the most important. So I think that is healthy for a team, you know?
I think you have to go to a press conference. Thank you so much.
You,
thank you.
Pleasure.
Gonzalo, thank you.
Wonderful insight from both men, so we thank them for that.
Yeah, a lot of fun, the two guys talking about each other's sleeping and living habits as well. You can hear how much they mean to each other as well, which is a great thing for two players playing in the same position like that, and one of the keys to Spanish success, if they are to have further success at this championship. They've been one of the few heavyweights who've really done the business so far. Yeah. You know, there's been a lot of surprises at this championship. We just saw Denmark draw against Hungary, and a loss there would have knocked them out of the championship. We saw Germany really get through by the skin of their teeth against Latvia. So I think that's probably the best place to start with this interview with Bjørn Pattsen, the German expert for EHFEuro.com and one of the best handball nerds/experts out there. Bjørn Pattsen, thank you for joining us. First of all, what on earth happened against Latvia for Germany today?
Yeah, I think this is always the old problem when you think that when you are ahead by 7 goals after 45 minutes, then it's all over. And yes, the German team really stopped playing. And from minute to minute, Latvia got stronger and Germany got weaker. And finally, I would say if the match takes 1 minute longer, then Germany will lose it.
And so what you talked to a lot of players after the game. What was their reaction, or what did you make of their reaction?
In the end, they were really shocked by their own performance. They were saying, we wanted to show a different face after this defeat against Spain, but we never managed to do so. And in the end, they were really happy to win this match, to go to Vienna. And what they were saying was, okay, we didn't have our best performance here in Trondheim. Maybe with a lot of German fans in Vienna, it will all get better because they're still talking about the semifinal.
All right, so before we go into more detail about the players and the matches themselves, we'll ask you something quite simple. The three matches, we want you to give them, as if you were a school teacher, a grade. So we're going to go Western grades here, not 1 to 6, but A, B, C, D, E, F. A being the best, F being a huge fail.
Okay, I would say a D minus.
For the Latvia game?
No, for all three together.
All three together?
All three together, okay. Except maybe, for example, 20 good minutes against the Dutch team and 8, 10 good minutes against Spain. And today, 20 minutes. So, okay, I give a D.
Okay.
And if you were to give a quick grade for each of the three games individually?
So, okay, then for the Dutch game, I give a C. Yeah. For the Spanish game, I give a D. And, okay, for Latvia game, when you see the first 45 minutes, it was quite okay. But then they really lost everything, their pace, their rhythm, and their confidence. So this is a D minus if you have something like this.
Okay, yeah, fair. Yeah.
I think confidence is a word which I think when coming into the tournament, there was a lot of people talking about all the injuries and problems that you have in the backcourt. And it feels like to me that they've almost, the players have been affected by that to a certain extent. And they have still really good players who have performed on this level before. But this time out seem to be suffering from what you said, I mean, a lack of confidence. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, when you just look on three of the potential real key players in this team, when you see Uwe Gensheimer, he got this red card in the first match against the Netherlands after only 15 minutes, after he already missed two penalty shots. Then he comes against Spain, misses the first attack, misses the second attack, misses two penalty shots, and is not even on the court in the second half. Today, it was a little bit getting better, but when you talk to him and see him, he's searching for his confidence. When you saw him in the last test match against on German ground against Iceland, how he's called his spin shots and everything like this. He was much more confident. Then we have a second one is Andreas Wolf. He was a player of the match against Netherlands. He was brilliant, brilliant match in the first 50 minutes. Then Johannes Bitter came in. Then he came against Spain. I think in the match against Spain, he had one or two saves only. And today against Latvia, Johannes Bitter started, which is, I think, Andy Wolf had to think about this situation because he's not sure in the national team that he's not starting. So, and he's a little bit out of confidence or even more. So, and then you have a player like Patrick Winczek. He came like a defense wall from THW Kiel, and in the Spain match he made many mistakes in defense. Today he got better a little bit. But these two players, you're absolutely right, they're lacking confidence.
You pointed out to me yesterday the game against Spain, with the moment in particular that really sums up how this German defense isn't working, when Raul Entrerios almost stumbled right through the middle of that defense. Also, we saw Luke Steins in the first game just tear them apart. I mean, he's a very tricky and very good player, but absolutely tears them apart. To move back to Gensheimer there, you talk about confidence with a player like that, but he's also the captain of the team. And I feel at this level, when you have a captain of a national team, they need to be just to get over themselves. They need to put their own confidence issues to one side and just be the guy who's rock solid for them at all times. So do you think he is captain material in that sense?
This was a big discussion after the Spanish game. So we talked with him yesterday and a little bit also today after the match against Latvia. So he says, I want to go forward. I want to be the boss of this team. I want to be the team captain. I want to bring this team ahead. But in the end, he didn't have the confidence and also the performing level to do so. When you saw today's matches against Latvia, there was only one player. When you really saw with his energy, with his power, with his confidence, was Julius Kühn. And yes, and Patrick Winczek said in the right way, he saved us today with his 8 goals. So in the end, Julius Kühn was exactly what you expect from a key player. He maybe switched off his brain and just said, okay, let's go through it and things like this. And at the moment, Uwe Gensheimer, in contrast to last year's World Championship, is not on the level to be the real leader of this team.
So if he's not, then who would you think? Is there anyone that you would put ahead of Uwe Gensheimer as the leader of the team?
Yeah, the funny thing is that the last entry of this team is Johannes Bitter, the goalkeeper. He's someone who has nothing to lose. He won the Champions League. He was world champion. So he came here to help the team, and he's a very experienced player. He's emotional. So in this case, a player like Johannes Bitter could lead the team, of course. But he came here with a different role. He was said, okay, I'm the clear number one behind Andreas Wolf. He's saving good, but not on a level that we had expected. And of course, the others in this team is the middle block. It's Patrick Winczek and Henrik Pekler. They say a lot in the team. They discuss a lot with their older players, and they have a good standing with the coach. So they could be these key players. But I really hope... this is what the coach and the player said. The players, they need this atmosphere. They need fans to support them, and an atmosphere like they had last year in their home world championship with a full arena. And so they really hope for a great support now in Vienna, and that this could be the thing that changes the whole atmosphere and attitude in the team.
Yeah, Bitter came into my head earlier when I was thinking who else could probably lead the team. But I think the fact that he just came back and also the fact that we don't know what his plans from here on out are either. So we don't know how long he's going to stay either. And I think in terms of consistency, it'd be difficult to nominate him as captain because you need to have somebody who's going to stay.
Look, I mean, a captain who's nominated is not, it's not the only guy who's able to talk. You know, we've been in handball teams before, and there, and in all sport teams, you see there are leaders who are not the face of the team, but within the dressing room and on the sideline, in the timeouts, can be the leader. So it's not like a case of, okay, Uwe, step aside, but other players in the team can step up and take that mantle. We say, if needs be, now is the time for them.
So I'm not talking about the getting Uwe away from the captain role. Yeah. So Uwe definitely is the captain of his team. At the moment, he's not the leader of his team. So, but when we talk about a player who's sometimes only mentioned as a kind of leading person in his team, it could be Fabian Böhm. But also Fabian Böhm is the nice thing that Brokop called him, he's my warrior. So a warrior with emotions, and he goes ahead and he has to say in the team. So he could be also someone, but he's also below par at the moment at the Euro.
Second choice, clearly. I think if you were going into the main round now, after that performance from Julius Kühn, he's the only backcourt player you can really trust, I think, as well. In that backcourt, you also have Weber, who was, I think, in some people's minds, a contentious choice to be included in the squad, the fact that he isn't really used as a defender. And as I think we spoke about a few days ago off-air, in that case, can only really be used in one half of the game. Looking at the squad now, assuming it's the 17-man squad that Christian Prokop has brought, and I mean, going to Vienna, it's not difficult to bring some other players within the 28-man squad. If you all of a sudden happen to be in the hot seat tomorrow on the plane to Vienna and thinking about your 16 men, which one or two changes would you make?
So what's obvious, a lot of journalists ask Christian Prokop today about bringing in Steffen Weinhold, the left-handed player right back from THW Kiel, as a kind of more experienced player. When he nominated his 17th squad, he was not fit on this level, so I don't know how fit he is at the moment. So I would even bring as a fourth line player, because I really love to see him play, Johannes Goller, and then you have different options in attack, especially when you see how they played against Spanish attack. They did not play with two line players. So, and when you see that, for example, you have two players like Kohlbacher and Goller behind your defense row, working really hard for the backcourt. Of course, you need a shooter like Kühn then. But I would say, okay, we have to see. It's not easy to find out which player to send out of the squad now. Maybe Schmidt as a left-handed player. Replace him by Weinhold, and another one maybe Zika. But Zika plays a good match as a wing for Goller. But I would try to have a different attacking strategy now with two line players. So I only have to find someone. Maybe Weber did not play so much. We can talk if we say, okay, about the backcourt players, Weber or Schmidt. It's not an easy decision, because we were talking yesterday with the vice president of the German Handball Federation. He said this is currently the best squad we have, because we have three injured right backs and three injured playmakers. On the other position, it's normally the best what we have.
And if you think about it, I mean, what you're saying there, particularly when you go for the two line player option, which would be a different look. But if you got two of those four line players in on the line, you've got Julius Kühn in the form that he's in, and then Kai Hefner if he gets his acting gear, or Steffen Weinhold as the two backcourt players there. It's quite a tasty menu. You know, those four players in the center diamond in attack is up there with anyone when you go into the main round in Vienna. But
it's a risky game.
It's a risky game, yeah, sure.
Because if you're not used to playing that kind of game with two line players, yeah, I think you might experience a lot of turnovers with that kind of game.
And then we have to talk about the preparation itself. So all the others could start, all the other nations could start at 15, 16 December, but they had to wait for all the Bundesliga players now. And the German team only have one player outside of Bundesliga, and this was Andy Wolf in Kielce. And he had his last match about 12 December, something like this. Yeah. So in the end, the German Bundesliga had the last match there on 28th of December, and the preparation started on 2nd of January, including two test matches, one in Vienna, one in Mannheim, which you cannot use as training days. So in the end, I think they had four or five training sessions only before the Euro, and so it's even harder when you say, okay, we try to have a solution with two line players.
And they're not training tomorrow, I saw as well in the media information, so if there are any changes, anyone comes on the plane, there'll be no time to integrate them.
Of course, this new concept that a travel day is not a rest day. You have the Wednesday, of course, before the matches. But then you have two sessions, of course. Yeah. So the time is quite short, especially as they never used to play with two line players normally.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Wolf is another player now, which you think would be one of those leading figures in the team. And I think he'd be very disappointed with his performance against Latvia today. I think he was 0 from 6.
Yeah, taking together with the 2 saves from Spain. And when you go back on the performing level he had in the last years, and he was, to be honest, he was the clear number one. And Jogi Bitter was supposed, like the rundown of the Netherlands match. Wolf gets out after 50 minutes and the second goalkeeper gets match experience. Mm. But at this time, he's lacking his confidence, and also he didn't come in the match. And of course, when you saw him against Spain, the really hard times for him was when there was no cooperation from the defense. All these 6-meter shots from Spain were from the 6-meter or from counter-attack goals. So he was one against one, and he got really mad about it.
Yeah, maybe that's the flip side of not playing since the 12th of December.
Yeah, maybe. But he said for him it was completely different. He had never a season like this. But when you saw him in the preparation and in the test matches, he was on 100. He was the Wolf we had in Krakow.
Also in the Champions League, he's had a good first half of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, you talked there a lot about the counter-attacks and 6-meter shots. Would you blame the goalkeepers so much then? Or do you think the issue lies more with the defense?
I say, and when we have the 6-meter shots and the counter-attack, so the chances for goalkeeper is definitely lower than 50%. So in the end, I don't even blame the defense. I blame for these counter-attack goals, you have to blame the attack.
Yeah.
Because when you see how many technical mistakes they did against Spain and also did in some parts of the Dutch game, and today how they missed their shots and missed passes and the turnovers, something like this. So the problem is normally not the defense. When the defense is on the 6-meter line or defends a normal defense structure, they're good. But the problem is how many balls you lose on attack.
And talk to us a little bit about Christian Prokop and what people are saying in the German media at the moment. Is he under pressure now from German media?
I would say the good thing or the positive thing is that he changed in his attitude and everything like this during last year World Championship. So at first he became successful. They finished on 4th, which was that they had really dreamed of this medal, but they didn't make it. But during the World Championship, he was growing as a coach. And of course, you're still in the race for the Olympic qualification, because the big goal was or is playing at the Tokyo Olympic Games for a medal. So they secured their place in the Olympic qualification. But of course, in the constellation we have now, so when you see which teams are facing in Malmö and which teams are already eliminated from Malmö and which teams will face in Vienna. So it was obviously that the coach and the player said, okay, our goal is the semifinal. So Prokop also said that we should not be too enthusiastic and keep the feet on the floor because of these 6 injuries. I think at the moment it's more the look on the player like the performing level of Gensheim and Wolf than on the coach's level. So I would say the pressure is, if they miss the main round today, of course the pressure is on the coach, but they're going to Vienna. And with the new playing system, you have 4 matches instead of 3, so you have 1 chance more to take points. So this is 1 chance more, I think, for it. You remember the German team, usually they grow in a tournament. So to be honest, they really, if there's some fans and some support and they have a good start against Belarus, and then the second match is against, this is the group most crucial match against Croatia. So if they beat Croatia, so then everything is open again for the semifinal. But if they lose against Croatia, the semifinal is over, so they can go for 5th and 6th. But
I reckon Belarus is going to be a tricky task as well. I wouldn't look too far past them at the moment.
Belarus at the moment really is a team which tactically can change a lot, because Yuri Shevtsov definitely is a great coach, and they're getting more and more experience. They had very young players. They started, I think, the build-up of this team in 2017, 2016, and now they have the experience of some more international tournaments. And, of course, they're not those players who you say, like C.R. Rutenka they had before, but as a team they developed, and there's a good job to be done by Yuri Shevtsov. But to be honest, if your aim is to go to the semifinal, then you should, of course, you have to think about Belarus first, because the first match, but you have to say, okay, we will play against Belarus, against Croatia, and the two others we don't know from Vienna. But usually Croatia is the biggest opponent which you will face now.
I think apart from all the travel, that Germany have done quite a lot of travel, especially with the friendlies beforehand, and now they're up in Norway going down to Vienna again. I think one of the added benefits of going to Vienna is they're probably going to expect a lot more German fans in Vienna, which should give them a boost.
Yeah, definitely. So what I heard is approximately 1,000 fans per German match from Germany. And even German Handball Federation, they have a debut at the Euro. They have a German house in Vienna. Oh. So the German house is a kind of beer pub and restaurant with traditional Austrian food and some beer. And there's some opportunities for the fans to meet before the matches. So they said, okay, we have one big block of German fans and we all go from this, I think it's Augustinerkeller or whatever, to the arena. And there's space for approximately 400 people. And in the evening after the matches, there's some quiz nights and interviews with former players like Henning Fritz, Dominik Klein or whatever. So there's a nice chance for the German fans to gather around and to get something like a fan group and a fan feeling like they had last year in Germany, of course. So, and if this works, this idea, so this is what the player said today. He said, it's hard for us in today. I don't know how many spectators there were in the arena. I said, there was zero atmosphere. So, and we're not used, because they're playing Bundesliga, between 5,000 and 12,000 spectators. They said, we're not used to play in an empty arena. So even for them, it's better if 10,000 shout against them, as there is silence in the arena, as there was today.
I think the Germans overestimate the Bundesliga crowd sometimes. I think it's just clapping, a lot of clapping in the Bundesliga as well.
Of course, it's clapping, but there are fans. Yeah, it's sure. Just about that when you look around and you see people in the stands.
Yeah. I think it was, 4,000 today? I mean, in an arena like this, it can look a bit more empty, but...
For a Monday night,
wasn't
not bad.
For a Monday night, not so bad. You'll be going to Vienna then, and it sounds like you'll have a lot to keep you busy before and after the games as well. Mm-hmm. But for us, we're going to Malmö, and maybe one thing of solace for people looking at Germany's performances and the results is that every team that were expected to do things at this championship seemed to be struggling so far. You know, Sweden lost against Slovenia last night. Denmark lost their first game against Iceland and drew today against Hungary. So there's something strange happening in Sweden and particularly in Malmö.
Yeah, first start here in Trondheim, that France is already out.
Sure, yep.
Then, but you see, especially the Scandinavian teams, they're struggling at home. I call it a home. And when you see the performance of Denmark today, it looks like the bush is burning there. So you never know what happens in the last game. And it might be that it's over for the Olympic champions and the world champions on the big dream to hold all three titles.
Well, they have one game left to survive, and that group is wide open. We'll go from the Old Testament to the New Testament, and Norway seem to have found their savior, their Jesus, Sander Sagosen. We asked the Norwegian commentators a couple of days ago whether this could be a career-defining championship for Sander. So far, so good for him. What do you make of his prospects for the rest of the tournament?
To be honest, I still remember, for me personally, I was in Aalborg in 2014 at his first EHF Euro. And in his first EHF Euro match, Norway plans against Spain. His coach was Robert Hedin, very experienced coach. And Spain were ahead by 7-1 or something like this. And Hedin took a timeout and just wanted to start talking. And then this 18-year-old, which nobody knew except some Norwegian journalist, took over and said, hey, coach, stop talking. I tell you now how we are playing. And I said, what arrogant bastard this is. And I said, this cannot be. He comes for the first Euro in his first match and he's already tried to explain the players how they should play. I said, on one hand, it will be a world star, or on the other hand, you will never see him again. And what we see now, Sander Sagosen was always right. Robert Hedin, unfortunately, is no more the coach of the Norwegians after the tournament in Aalborg, but you see the star was growing. And to be honest, this tournament is definitely the one for Sander Sagosen. I mean, you see, she had so many tournaments where the home team had the brilliant stars, like when we don't talk about the final anymore, Mikkel Hansen in 2014 in Denmark, or Nikola Karabatic 2017 in France. And this tournament, of course, unfortunately for Sagosen, after 1 week he has to leave Trondheim, his home city, and goes to Malmö. But I think due to the respect of some Scandinavian fans, this will be his tournament.
So you think that he's going to have some momentum going into the other cities, even though you lose that shine that you had of being in Trondheim and being in your hometown? You think he's had such a boost of endorphins now going into the next season, that it would just be like a snowball effect for him.
It will be interesting. What I heard from fan numbers for the main round in Malmö is that a lot of Icelandic fans have tickets. 8,000 Danish fans have tickets, so it might be some away matches for Sweden there. And you never know. The Norwegians, they like to travel. They find ways to get tickets. I remember the Women's World Championship Final 2017 in Hamburg, when somehow 9,000 fans from Norway were in the arena. Nobody got to know where they got the tickets from. And so there can be a real Scandinavian festival with a lot of support from Norwegian fans for Sander Sagosen. And of course, he knows. Then we're back about the German team. He is confidence. He's the, we call him Jesus, call him Savior, whatever. He's flying on the wings of success. And I would even say it's the Midas touch from him. So he touches shit and gets gold out of it. So he's really has the whole fate of his team and his country in his hands.
Now, I know we're only at the beginning of January in 2020, but I'm already looking forward to the Olympics in 2028 when Robert Hedin, USA coach, has a chance for revenge against Sander Sagosen. But until 2028, we'll thank you now, Bjorn. Great chat, as always, with you, and I'm sure we'll get you on again on the final weekend in Stockholm.
See you.
That was Bjorn Patson. Thank you very much, Bjorn. Always wonderful insight, facts, names, stories. His second time on the podcast, of course, and I'm sure we'll see him again before the Euro finishes. It's our last few hours, I suppose, in Trondheim. It's been a good ride.
It has been a lot of fun. Just one more day left here. And it's a big game as well. In Norway and Portugal tonight. That's going to be a cracker. Great way to finish off. We've had huge occasions throughout the first week, and I'm sure Malmö is going to treat us through a few more days for the extra extended main round as well, with four games. But until then, as they say in Norway, Brian,
hare.